Hi, this is Mark Waid, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 349 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Joe, joined by Todd. Todd, how are we doing this evening?
Fantastic. I'm all energetic and ready to go.
Right. Just turn on the mics, saving it all for the air. No bunch of extraneous conversations for the last hour before we started recording this show. That'd be foolish.
That would be a waste of podcast time, and we're podcast pros, to tell you the truth.
Right, we're on a limited time of how many podcasts are allowed to be on the internet, which is why so many of the other shows on our network don't do shows anymore.
I believe in conserving internet.
Right,
it's one of our finite resources, so we don't want to use too much of it too fast. I don't know, is internet renewable?
I don't know. I left the Paris talks about that last week before they started talking about internet.
I didn't get there. My ticket was canceled, so.
And that's about as political as this show is going to get.
That's right.
Let's get into this week's news and everything that we're going to be talking about. A little bit of a light news week, a little bit of light books, but we'll kind of get into things here. A little bit of con talk. Philly Con for Wizard World was this past weekend, and some interesting booths popped up. And the time that there was the great Marvel sale on digital books through Amazon.
Yes.
We'll kind of get into a little bit of that, and you know that'll be where we'll get our plugs for the Amazon read, I guess. A bunch of conventions are happening this weekend. And one that is going to make Todd particularly sad.
Oh, and a lot of typing to get these conventions on the show, I know of.
Todd, it was worth it when we get there.
I can't wait.
Digital sales and freebies. We're going to talk a little bit about Saga number 43, of course. And we do have a return of the preview review book. We're going to be talking about another new Image book that comes out in a couple weeks, actually. We're also going to discuss in Todd and Joe Have Issues, Sandman number 8, with another discussion for what we'll be talking about next week's Todd and Joe Have Issues, as well as at the very end of the show, to avoid spoilers and such, in-depth conversation in regards to the Wonder Woman feature-length theatrical film.
That's right, but it will not involve any ice cream talk.
Right, and we'll save that for then as well. We're going to keep you tuned in for all this.
That's what the kids call a tease in podcasting.
So, I have not been to Wizard World Philly in some time. And I don't think you have either.
The last time I was at Wizard World Philly, I commissioned some sketches.
Oh, boy.
Yes, but anyway, that was the last time I was in Philly. With Matt, and that's when he got his Steve Dillon sketch.
Mm-hmm.
These are the ways I remember things.
So, earlier in the weekend at Wizard World, one of the booths that were set up was for a company called Rabbit Company. And this was a company that sold sex toys.
Mm-hmm.
Very graphic, very adult, no confusion here, sex toys.
Right.
Now, they were not on the original schedule for exhibitors that were going to be there, but apparently, this was brought to the, Wizard World representatives' attentions enough, that these people were gone before the weekend was over.
What?
Wizard World released a statement stating, they deal with hundreds of vendors, and it is possible for a vendor not to be forthright with all the products they intend to display. We deal with over 450 vendors, 400 artists, and over 400 celebrities over the course of a weekend. And while it is very possible that the photo that we saw misrepresented this company, the convention staff and displayed products, what they displayed went against convention policies, and they did ask them to leave.
Yep. I imagine when they got it, they thought it was like for old TV antennas, like rabbit ears.
Uh-huh.
And then when they found out, I just picture like old men with like big mustaches getting surprised and dropping their monocles into their drinks.
Now, that said, in the exhibitor list, there were booths for risque boutiques and pure romance. Now, both of these companies may not meet, as Wizard states, the strictest and cleanest standards in the industry as what to what is to be allowed and not allowed to be sold at their shows. That, coupled with a story that Wizard, in the first quarter of 2017, had their biggest losses to date. I don't know what's going on at these Wizard conventions anymore, Todd.
I don't know either. I just think it's crazy. I've been to cons that had risque stuff, but it wasn't like bustiers and stuff and corsets, but it was nothing like the pictures that I saw, you know, in the article and the, right. and the things that they were selling. And I'm no prude, Joe. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say I'm no prude, but I mean, what conventions are and what they're, you know, advertised at as I don't know how you can have that at a con. So, you know, whether they knew or not, or they just needed the check, I don't know. I have no idea.
Right. So I have been to, I think I was regaling this story to someone else the other day, that I have been to Wizard World conventions where, remember when booth babes were a thing?
Oh, that was, remember when that was the thing to be rallied against? Now I don't even know. Now is it cosplayer or something else?
I think booth babes have been drummed out of the industry.
No, they're still there.
Oh, they are still there.
Yeah, because all, a booth babe is any person who's, you know, in scantily clad clothes to bring attention to the booth. Okay. And they still have.
So there was a booth babe where the booth was selling some sort of like armaments, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of weapons, some sort of sword, replica things, right?
Right.
So she was dressed in kind of a Red Sonja-esque outfit.
Chainmail?
Well, kind of like your fur-lined bikini sort of deal.
Gotcha.
However, it appears as though she didn't stuff everything into the top of her bikini correctly. And she had a real long line of people that wanted to talk to her about swords.
But yes.
I don't think they were telling her that anything was hanging out.
Oh my goodness.
Now, I don't know if this was intentional on her part, the booth's part, or whatever, but that happened at a Wizard Con, I'm just saying.
Oh, I know, lots of parts, you know. but yeah, I mean, I've been going, you know, to, and I don't know what we consider a booth babe or not, but I remember going to cons, you know, geez, at all the way back 20 years ago, and models dressed as Vampirilla, you know what I mean, to get you to come to Harris's booth and stuff like that.
Sure.
Or even just people who were selling comics would have a person in a mock-up, you know, Vampirilla outfit. So, I mean, that's always been part of it, and it always will be. Anytime you sell something, you know, sex sells, so it does. But I don't know. I just think there's kind of a line that you kind of want for your all-ages, you know, show. That's what you're trying to advertise.
Right.
And, you know, having that stuff just isn't going to fly. Now, like we said, they say they didn't know. So I'll give them a pass this time.
Okay.
Next time, not so much.
So the other bit of news was over the weekend. Now, I'm not sure if it was definitely not an announced sale.
Mm-hmm.
But through Amazon's Kindle/Comixology store.
Right.
A ton of Marvel trades were at rock bottom prices.
Mm-hmm.
Some books up to 98% off their advertised prices.
That's some big math right there.
such things as, you know, just as an example, you had the what is it? Two trades, three trades of Superior Foes of Spider-Man.
I forget because I know there's one big omnibus. I think it is three trades for all of Superior.
They were $3 each.
That's a good price.
Right. So many of these were priced super, super low. Now, the sale, unfortunately, is over. But there is some stuff that is still super low. And, like, strangely low. Like, mm-hmm. But the thing is, as of this recording, the prices are slowly and slowly going back up. So, buyer beware, be forewarned, be forearmed, etc., etc. Many books, many trades are $450 to $550. Many trades are that price. The X-Men God Loves, Man Kills is there for $2. If you are an Amazon Prime member, which if you join up for Amazon Prime through us, we get some sort of kickback or something. They have books that are available on there for free. Like the first two trades of Kieran Gillen's Darth Vader run.
Right.
It's $0 for those trades.
That's a good deal.
That's a real good deal.
I would buy those at twice the price.
What was that?
I'd buy those at twice or three times the price of zero.
Right. The first trade of Squirrel Girl is $3.50. The first two trades of the current Kamala Khan Miss Marvel book are also free. This Deadpool Adamantium collection, which most importantly includes the entire Joe Kelly run of Deadpool, plus a bunch of other stuff, is $11.
Does it have a foreword by the old double R?
No, it does not, but there's a lot of double R representation in there.
Good, I was worried.
The Chris Claremont Frank Miller Wolverine graphic novel is $3. Now, I guess where a lot of this was coming in is people were afraid that this was a glitch.
Mm-hmm.
And we're afraid... Oh, also, just as I'm kind of going through, like, all the stuff that's for free.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Prime member, the first trade of Alias is free.
Interesting.
Uh-huh. So these are things, you know, just if you're a Prime member, keep an eye out for, et cetera, et cetera. But people were concerned that this might have been a glitch, and that the way that Amazon works versus other digital media subscription type things is if it's the digital version of something and you purchase it at a glitched price, they have the right to take it back.
Sure, because that it's easy that way.
Mm-hmm.
They can just go, oh, it's not in your queue or file or whatever anymore. So,
and the first two, the first two trades of Jessica Jones and the first two trades of the Jason Aaron Star Wars. Also the first two trades of the Matt Fraction Hawkeye. These are the books that are on Amazon right now for free if you're an Amazon Prime member.
Go get some good books.
You ain't kidding, pal. And I will make sure to include all of these links in the show notes tonight. Is that going to be a little extra work for me tonight? Possibly. Is it worth it? Absolutely.
Now, is it any work for me?
Do you want it to be work for you? Because I can make it work for you.
Now, if you make it work for me, do you think it will be done right?
No, I don't think it'll be done, period.
Oh, okay. Then, if there's no work for me, this is the greatest deal ever.
Right. But, yeah, I'm going to add all that to the digital sales and freebies stuff. And we're just going to kind of move stuff around with this since we're talking about digital books. A bunch of the stuff that's on sale this weekend, in addition to what we've kind of already addressed, that's available here for free, through whatever's going on with Amazon there. There is a second Wonder Woman sale going on, continuing a lot of the same stuff from last week. Not adding anything really new, but they held that sale over for a second week. Probably for no reason that I can think of.
Me either.
IDW is having a sale on a bunch of their Transformers stuff. Dynamite is having another sale on everything. You have to put in a coupon code for that, so just kind of keep your eyes out there. And then the Top Cow side of Image is having a sale on a bunch of stuff as well. Most notably out of that is Wanted, which was the, you know, which is a really good book. I think it gets a little bad rap here in 2017, but I think it still holds up.
Me too.
And I know people have told me that Postal is really good. I've never gotten a chance to read it. Just trying to go through what they have here. You know, you got your classics like The Darkness. Remember The Darkness?
Yes, I think they're making a TV show of that.
And then Witchblade. Remember Witchblade?
Yes, Yancey Butler.
Mm-hmm.
Who I think was named at, whose parents were big Thing fans. So they named her Yancey after the street he grew up on. I'm pretty sure that's true.
They didn't name her Petunia?
No, my sweet Aunt Petunia.
So, digital sales, digital freebies, all this stuff will be in the show notes, as will the information about all the conventions going on this weekend. And Todd, there is a plethora of conventions going on this weekend. Two particularly, there's two Kids Cons, both called Kid Con. One is in Pasadena, California. The other one is in Nashua, New Hampshire. The two are not affiliated with each other, but I think this is going to be a new thing that we're going to start seeing, where both of these conventions are primarily populated by stars of existing Nickelodeon and Disney Channel shows.
Ooh. I see what you mean there.
Right.
But I wonder, is one exclusively Disney and the other one exclusively Nickelodeon, or are they a mix?
It's a mix.
Oh, good. I was worried that they were the Disney and Nickelodeon were to get into the territories.
Well, and again, when you know the market is strong, it gives the opportunity for other people to come up.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not they end up being successful. And I'm only, you know, and obviously this just kind of leads into something else. There's a convention that's happening in September, but it was announced a couple weeks ago, but it kind of ties into this KidsCon thing, that Hasbro in September are going to be doing their own separate convention, where it's essentially going to be a showcase for all of their properties that they have. You know, everything from Transformers to My Little Pony to G.I. Joe to Nerf. You know, anything that Hasbro has is going to be at this convention. And they're going to, of course, have people that are associated with these projects, like people who do the voice in the Transformers shows, like your Peter Cullen and Frank Welkers, people who are involved with Magic the Gathering, which I did not know Hasbro had their hands in. But a lot of the people who do the voice acting on these cartoons are going to be at HasbroCon.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to see different, non-comic book things get into the same market that the comic book conventions are trying to keep under wraps.
Right.
Very interesting.
And they'll have a con for anything.
They certainly will. Such as, this weekend in Metropolis, Illinois, is the Superman Celebration.
Ooh.
It's a convention all things Superman. Dean Cain is going to be there. He was a Superman.
Yes, he was.
James Marsters is going to be there.
Right.
He was Brainiac on Smallville.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm. And Margot Kidder is going to be there.
She was Lois Lane in the Superman movies.
She certainly was. Also, we're all over the place. In Ocala, Florida, there's the Ocala Comic Book Convention. I only bring this one up because the most notable guest on here is internet personality and fantastic rapper Froggy Fesh, formerly known as Krispy Kreme.
But he would have got sued.
Well, his dad informed him that the donut company, Krispy Kreme, told him that he had to change his name.
That is true.
That is true. South City, a.k.a. San Francisco, is having a convention this weekend as well. A little bit more low-key. These are your more comic book folks. You got your Joe Lisner is going to be there. James O'Barr is going to be there. Ron Lim is going to be there. On the celebrity side of things, though, Dirk Benedict is going to be there.
Oh, my goodness. Starbucks / Face Man.
Now, Todd, I think you had mentioned on the show, we've already passed the anniversary of it, for me. But you mentioned on the show that somewhere down the line you wanted to do an episode, whether it be of this or of After Dark or of just some sort of ancillary thing, where we watched the Clint Eastwood film Unforgiven.
That's right, because it's the 25th anniversary this year. And last year was the 25th anniversary of Hudson Hawk, I believe.
Okay. Classic film as well.
Mm-hmm.
2.5 minutes to save Anna, 3.5 minutes to save the world. Anyone? Come on? Nope.
Never seen it.
You've never seen Hudson Hawk?
No.
Todd.
Yes.
I'm not going to call in my I'm not going to cash in my chip on this one.
Right.
But I also think somewhere down the line, if we're going to do an answer, well, keep Dirk Benedict in the back of your mind.
Right.
We'll talk about it later.
Okay. Was this something we were going to do on the show, but now maybe we're not going to talk about here?
We're going to talk about it later. It's going to be okay. The future.
Benedict Arnold.
There's okay. Two other big conventions as well. There's the Steel City Comic Con in Pittsburgh, which seems mm-hmm. to be burgeoning. It seems they do it like 3 times a year, which is fantastic, I think.
Good.
Some of the notable folks that are going to be there is Tom Savini.
I know
Linda Blair.
Exorcist.
Cassandra Peterson.
Who's that?
Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
Well, I know her as Elvira.
Come on. So. You don't know her by her shoot name?
No. No, you just outed her, you trash shoot.
Oh, well, that is me.
Mm-hmm.
But Todd,
tread lightly, Todd.
The big one this weekend is Comic-Con with two N's in Mashantucket, Connecticut?
Okay.
Let's just say it's in Connecticut somewhere. Ron Perlman is going to be there.
Hellboy.
Martin Cove is going to be there.
I don't know who Martin Cove is.
Well, when I tell you that he's appearing with Billy Zabka.
I don't know who Billy Zabka is either.
Billy Zabka, Johnny from The Karate Kid.
Oh, that's right.
Martin Cove is Kreese, the leader of the evil Cobra Kai dojo.
Oh, he's the guy, the cop from Cagney and Lacey. That's right.
No.
Yeah.
So there's the Bounty and the Mark picture with them, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But Todd, if you like professional wrestlers...
Right, and I do.
This is the convention for you.
Mm-hmm.
The Nasty Boys are going to be there.
Right.
Lita.
Oh, Lita.
Scott Hall.
He's the bad man.
Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
Isn't he the guy who did something and the guy tried to escape through the window?
Yes.
Marty Generic.
Yes. Ric Flair.
Oh, my goodness. Charlotte's grandfather.
Right. But still announced as of this recording, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
Appearing at this convention in Mashantucket, Connecticut?
Mm-hmm.
Is Bobby the Brain Heenan.
No, that's not true. Let's go. Let's go.
Todd, bro. I do have something going on this weekend that does... prevent me from traveling to Connecticut.
On Saturday?
I have a shoot job. And then I have a busy weekend.
Yes, well.
But as of today, Bobby Heenan is still listed on the guest list.
I say we fire up the long box blimp.
Right.
And we head out there.
The chopper's in the shop.
What?
I said the chopper is in the shop.
That's right. Long Box Blimp, a.k.a. Big Blimpin', or Blimpin' Ain't Easy. We haven't decided on what the name of the blimp is. And we head out and see the Brain, man.
The now, it's greatest... only $35 photo ops for Bobby the Brain Heenan.
$35?
Yeah.
I would walk up to Bobby and tell him in my best Fry impersonation, shut up and take my money. I'd be like, here's a tip, Bobby.
That's the only thing. It's $35 to get in the show,
mm-hmm.
and then it's another $35 for the Bobby Heenan picture.
And let me just tell you, in all honesty,
right.
I would drive up there, hand the man at the ticket machine the $35, walk over to Bobby the Brain, slap $35 down on the table, get my picture taken, and then turn around and walk out. Just drive home.
You wouldn't want to stay and see the tights in Mashantucket, Connecticut?
No.
No?
I would not. Listen, Once you've been to Mashantucket, you can never go back. Okay. Nothing tops it. So.
All right.
Oh, I lost Joe there for a second.
I don't know. We'll talk about it.
Okay.
So we're doing things out of order, which is the way that things are done here on the soon-to-be-named network.
Throw the script out.
That's right. So some of the shows here on the soon-to-be-named network, just like Longbox Heroes and Longbox Heroes After Dark, you've got Fresher in Parlance, you've got The Profane Argument, you've got Puzzle Warriors 3, you've got Podvocacy, you've got AIM Downsides Podcast. And those are the only ones I'm saying this week.
Uh-oh.
You know why.
I don't know why.
The royal you.
Oh, pronouns, pal.
So head over to soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com for all the information about all of these fine shows in this podcasting conglomeration. So we've done enough stretching here to pad out this show.
Stretching. This is all good talk right here.
This is called the Memphis stall. What this is.
Is that the bathroom?
No.
The Memphis stall.
Oh my goodness. So let's get into books that we read from this past week. Todd, let's start off with Saga number 43, and I'll kick it to you to start things off.
Saga 43, after another several month, vacation, as this book often does. It is only a quarter for issue 43. I guess Brian K. Vaughan can afford the hit, like Kirkman. But basically, this is the main characters after the tragic incidents of issue 42 looking for someone who can help them with the problem that Prince Robot hurt. She's had a miscarriage, the main character, and they have to go find somewhere that will remove it before it kills her. And there's a story of them. And I tell you, this is one of those books that has one of those first pages that grabs you the way Saga issues often do. And it is actually a great jumping on point because it basically does give you the rundown of like a couple of page rundown of how we've gotten to where it is. It's basically a recap for the first part of the issue. And if you wanted to try it, I would say step up, and this is a good spot to get it.
Many a times when Saga does their break and they come back from the time being off,
mm-hmm.
And they start a new storyline, they're not as recappy as this issue was.
Right.
And I say that in a good way for this issue. With them doing this as a price to buy 25-cent issue,
mm-hmm.
You're going to have to do a little bit more recapping because you've got to expect a lot more people are going to be picking this up than your normal readers. Now, back in the day, we used to look at sales numbers, and by we, I mean me, pronouns pal, would look at the sales numbers and talk about this, that, the other thing, and what changed and what didn't change. But I would assume that if you look at the numbers for Saga, these first issue story arcs probably see a little bit of a bump, and then they have a little bit more retention. Now, obviously, with this being a 25-cent issue, this being a 25-cent issue and probably having more folks involved with reading this one, you're going to have to walk some folks through this one a little bit more than others.
And I think it helps, too, at issue 43, for the longtime readers to recap some things, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it gives you a memory jog, especially, after 2 months being off and we're deep into it now, into the story. I kind of liked it. It kind of made me, realize where we were at all places, and I kind of liked it. So, you don't need it, after every break, but this helped a lot.
And the other thing that I noticed that they did that they didn't usually do with previous, breaks in between new starting points for new story arcs is a lot of times they'll do a bit of a time jump, not a huge time jump, but a time jump nonetheless. There did not seem to be a time jump with this.
Or if it was, it was a very short one.
Right.
Because I would guess there's a time jump, because obviously you had the high print, I don't mean high as in, like, he was on drugs, Prince Robot attacking Alana and all that stuff, and the problem with the baby happened, but now they're working together. So it seems to me that some time has passed, because they realize that they need each other just for this thing, and then they're going to go their separate ways. So to me, a little bit of time has passed, but not much, because nobody's grown up the way they did in the past time jumps, if that makes any sense.
Right. So the two new elements that were introduced to this, as Todd mentioned, that they're attempting to get the past fetus that's still inside Alana out of her. But then while they're out on the fields, they're introduced to the dung people.
Mm-hmm.
Which are, people made of poop.
Right.
So they're battling them, and then we get a new revelation about one of the characters as well, about something that they may not have been able to do before.
And they can do now.
And
so.
What may be causing them to do such.
Right.
So, again, good, as we mentioned, good jumping on point, and especially for 25 cents, you can't beat it.
Right.
You'd be silly not to get this.
Hey, it's only a quarter.
Right. So one of the other books that we read is a book that's not going to be out here for another 2 weeks. And this is Gail Simone's first book at Image, a book called Crosswind, with art by Kat Staggs.
Yes.
So there are two stories going on in this. One is, your typical generic hitman story. Person has been betrayed. This kind of vulgarities that you would see in a movie like your Goodfellas, Casinos, whatever your Martin Scorsese type movies would be.
Pulp Fiction.
And then there's another story going on where it's it appears to be at the very least a second wife, because the teenager stepson is really super rude to him. The husband is really super rude to her. The teenage boys in the neighborhood are really, really awful to her. And then something happens that causes them to, these two completely unrelated people, at least so far unrelated, to switch minds, I guess.
Right.
And we're kind of left with, this... at the end of the issue is them realizing that they're not in their actual bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the rest of the story is going to be the how this happened, the why this happened, and the what's going to happen now that these things have happened.
Right. Hilarity will ensue.
Hilarity will ensue.
But, go ahead.
I really like this. It was different. It's not the typical Gail Simone book. Obviously, most of the stuff that she's written has been superhero bent, whether it be overtly superhero like your Secret Six, or your, covertly superhero where it's more survival-y stuff with superheroes in the background, as the Megapolis books. Now, there was discussion of her having a fantasy book coming out from Dark Horse, but I don't think that's seen the light of day yet.
It'll probably happen.
Right. So this is a very interesting book for her, and I really liked it. And I like the art as well. I wasn't initially familiar with Kat Staggs' art. I know she's done some other stuff here and there. She did a lot of the digital first stuff from DC. The Supergirl stuff, the Wonder Woman stuff, just more recently. But there's nothing that really popped out at me that I've seen her, but I really liked her art in this book.
The only place that I really knew her from was I knew she did paintings on cards.
Okay.
I think she was some Star Wars cards. And then I remember when Tom Derenick did finishes over her roughs in Dollman and something else. The name of the book was Doll Man and Something Else by Jimmy Palmiotti. I remember that. And
okay.
It looked nothing like this. Nothing. Right. I really like this too. This was really cool. Again, one of those things where I think the colorist really helps in this. But I love the Cat Stags art on this.
So what did you think of this?
I really liked it because I went in cold to this completely, where you're like, oh, we're going to have a preview review this week. And I'm like, okay, I'm, you know, who's writing it? Gail Simone. I'm like, all right, I'm in. Cat Stags on art. And I read it and I'm reading this going, all right, we have the hitman and we have the wife who's, you know, not only is the neighbor kids, you know, picking on her and the stepson. And then maybe her husband is abusive, if not, you know, physically, definitely mentally, he might be cheating on her. I'm like, all right, but how, like, at no point do I see how these stories are going to intertwine.
Right.
And then it happens and I'm like, oh, okay. Now this is intriguing to me. Like, not that the stories weren't intriguing, but they were so far apart that I couldn't see where this was going, not knowing the gist of the book. And then it was like, boom. And I'm like, okay, now the hook, now I want more. So
right.
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Right. And I'm of the same mindset as well. As I knew the only little bit that I knew more about this book than Todd was that it was a thing that was coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were allowed to talk about it on the show.
Mm-hmm. That's way more than I knew.
Right. It was essentially like, hey, Gail Simone has a new book coming out. That's really all I need to know. I'm good. Don't tell me mm-hmm. anymore.
Right.
And we'll figure out what the pieces of it, and the title didn't let on what it could or would be about. I didn't read the solicitation text on purpose because I wanted to be pleasantly surprised, and I was. So when this one does come out in 2 weeks, I highly recommend it.
Me too.
So that's what we read this week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern Standard Time or so, we put up the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them in trade, whether you're going to wait several years for them to be free on Amazon Kindle. It's up to you. Be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out, be prepared, so you're able to pick up what you have ready to go. Now, with the poll post, we do two different things. One, we attempt to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out. We're currently tied 11, which is as good as being tied at 0 or 100. And we also are keeping a running tally of how many books we're purchasing through the course of the calendar year, and also breaking out by publisher. Now, I do want to mention, of course, you know, it's not a race or anything. I'm currently in the lead, but we do run into situations from time to time where Todd forgets books. So I don't know how accurate of a tally this is going to be at the end of the year. Now, I'm not going to say that I'm innocent. I've forgotten a book or two myself, and I have gone back and recrunched the numbers, but you admittedly forget books on a much more regular basis than I.
Right. So, hey, it happens.
So I'm up on you by 6 books because this is a mammoth week for me.
Yes, it is a huge week for you.
But looking at your list is going to make things a little bit easier for me, I think. I think the book you are most looking forward to coming out this week is Doctor Strange number 20.
You are correct, sir.
Bingo.
I want to see the end of this storyline. And, you know, before I read issue 21, the big Secret Empire crossover.
But I can hear you winking into the microphone.
I am a microphone winker. I'm looking at your list, and I have a question.
Go ahead.
As we often do. What is the unsound number one?
The unsound number one is a new Cullen Bunn horror book from Boom Studios. What's it about, Todd? It's a Cullen Bunn book, and I'm going to get it.
A la the Gail Simone segment we just had.
Exactly.
I am going to go with the book you are looking forward to most is the unsound number one.
You are incorrect.
What? That's wrong. Recount.
As much as I am looking forward to that book coming out, the book I am most looking forward to coming out is also Doctor Strange number 20.
He takes the lead.
Again, this is one that, you know, we've discussed for at least 2 weeks on the show where it's shipped out of order, it's shipping late. how is this happening? Why was I not notified in triplicate that this was happening?
Oh, no.
Does anyone else think of the spreadsheets?
Will anyone think of the spreadsheets?
Todd, you'll be happy to know that you are not the only one who ribs me about these sort of things.
You're saying other people than me give you a gentle ribbing?
Right.
And Voldemort? Oh, wow.
So, while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out past poll posts, past episodes of this show, past episodes of After Dark. The direct links to those shows are in there. The episode last week that we did with Adam Lash of Powerbomb TV and the upcoming Break the Barrier event that I will be there doing commentary on. Todd will be there hawking his wares and taste testing any unwrapped food that anyone brings for me.
I am your food taster.
That's this Sunday in Old Forge, Pennsylvania, or live streaming on powerbomb.tv. Be sure to check it out any way that you can. Of course, also past editions of the poll post as mentioned, past editions of Todd and Joe Have Issues. Anything that we've done on the internet is there. I mentioned, of course, the little button there for the store to purchase shirts and stickers. You could purchase them live and in person this weekend for myself or Todd. Get that person-to-person interaction that only comes from being at a live professional independent wrestling event.
That's right. I'm looking forward to it. Wrestling that's not on my electronic TV? Oh, boy.
But if you can't join us in Old Forge and purchase a shirt live and in person, or you've already purchased a shirt and a sticker, you could always purchase something through our Amazon click-through. We get a little bit of a kickback for anything that you purchase, and any little bit helps, of course. I think from those sales that we saw, somebody purchased the first four trades of Runaways. I think that was in conjunction of us talking about on the show a week or two ago. And, of course, the rock-bottom prices that were available through Amazon recently over the weekend. Someone also purchased the George Perez Wonder Woman Omnibus this past week.
I know who that was because they told me yesterday.
Okay. Someone also purchased the film Get Out on Blu-ray.
Get Out?
Yeah, Get Out. They did. They really did.
Wow.
Someone also purchased the Wonder Woman original motion picture soundtrack. And this one was stooged off to us, but I like reading the entire listing of this. Someone purchased a Sun Joe Pressure Joe PSI 14.5 amp electrical pressure washer.
Is that your pressure washer? Because it's got a lot of Joes written
Listen,
on
it. I didn't get an extra kickback on this one, but I'd like to think the person who purchased this bought it because it has my name in it so many times.
That's right. I could see your face on the side of the pressure washer. It was either Joe's pressure washer.
It was either this or the Burnzos.
Oh, boy.
So thank you, everyone, who purchased anything through our Amazon click-through this past week. Todd, did we have anything new in the Todd's Art Attack?
I don't believe we did.
Do I have to clickety-clack and check?
I'm checking right now.
Oh, that's right. Todd with his new fancy internet.
That's right. It goes fast. Nope, we had nothing.
Oh, well.
We had nothing since the thing that we had last.
Nothing from nothing is nothing.
Nothing, yeah.
You gotta have something.
We still need to do the musical episode.
We do. That's the one thing that we ladle the warmth from Podvocacy from.
Oh, good.
David Kincannon is a legitimate singer. He's singing at a wedding this summer. He's performed in multiple musicals.
He's a regular Adam Sandler, the wedding singer.
Oh, my goodness. Don't. Listen, I'm not going to tell him that you said that. Hopefully he doesn't listen to this podcast.
Who does? So don't worry about it.
Exactly. So, we scooped that. Oh, and even last week on Puzzle Warriors 3, Craig, who was a guest on this show, one of our highest listened to and highest rated episodes.
I check it every once in a while to see where we're at. I have it bookmarked in my phone so I can check this.
Craig not only sang with musical accompaniment.
Oh, my goodness.
Danger Zone from the Top Gun soundtrack.
Oh, from the Archer TV show, yeah.
Oh, my, I don't know what that is. It also had alternate lyrics to match the in-game Nova character, who has a power called Danger Zone.
Oh.
And Todd to say that he did a fantastic job with a song that has such pitch and range.
Mm.
I'd be lying if I said he did.
Two things. That episode is at 1,146 downloads.
Oh, I'm not going to.
And also, Nova? No Gambit or Rogue?
No. They're coming soon, I think. If the Marvel Puzzle Quest dirt sheets have told me anything, and they've never led me astray to date, Gambit and Rogue and Sabretooth and Mr. Sinister are all in the next character release packs.
Just around the corner.
Right. I say, hold your breath, fans. They'll be here any day now.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness. So, let's get into Todd and Joe Have Issues.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do and they do. Pronouns, pal. That's twice.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of pronouns, pal.
So, you picked the book this week, which was Sandman number 8 by Neil Gaiman and Mark Buckingham was the artist?
No, Drigenberg, isn't it?
Oh, okay.
Mike Drigenberg.
My mistake.
Right, Mark Buckingham, I don't think so. I'm pretty sure I know my Sandman 8, and I think it's Mike Drigenberg because I've always wanted a death, like, that's a dream sketch, is like a death by Mike Drigenberg, and okay. Also a page from this book, because before we even get in, I'm going to break this down because it is one of my favorite books of all time. I'm not a big Dave McKean fan who does the covers to Sandman.
Right.
Because a lot of times his covers by Sandman were very confusing. Like, you know, with collage stuff. And you'd be like, all right, the covers for each storyline would look the same. Like,
they'd have a similar feel or motif.
Right, the Key to Hell covers would look the same, but they would look different from the Kindly Ones covers. But it worked. But I know people who would get confused on the issues because they wouldn't know what ones, because you couldn't go, all right, I have issue 43 and 44. I can't tell from these covers what, you know, they're not very memorable. But the cover on 8 with the Dave McKean death is one of my favorite covers of all time. Just, I think it looks beautiful. It's him doing art and not collage-y stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first thing that caught my eye when I see this book. So I go there. And then you open it up, and it's Mike Drigenberg's art. And it's beautiful. Amazing. All the way through, just natural, you know, people doing natural things, posing or sitting. And he doesn't ever make it look staticky. It looks like two people feeding pigeons in a park.
It looks real.
Yes, that's the best way to put it. It at no point looks forced or rehashed every panel.
Mm-hmm.
He does a very good job with it. And I love that. And then you get to the story, and it's basically Sandman is feeding pigeons because he's depressed after the beginning of the Preludes and Nocturnes is him, you know, after being attacked by a mystical thing, he gets captured, gets out, needs to find his talismans, gets revenge on the person, and now he's rudderless. And he has a conversation with his sister Death, and, you know, we go from there. She takes him on a tour of her duties, you know, picking up souls for the afterlife. And for a book that I just described, one of the, like, you know, weirdest things, the God of Dreams with the personification of death are discussing their lives. It is the most natural thing one of the most natural things I have ever read, because the beauty of Sandman is how far-fetched it is with realistic conversations. And I love this issue so, so much. I don't even know where to start on this. I think I started at the cover, but...
Yeah, so you started with the cover.
Sorry, I ramble occasionally. Go ahead.
No. So I postulated that I would read this and it all just come swimming back to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't come swimming back to me the way that I thought it would. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I forgot one, and I'm not saying this in a bad way. I forgot how there's that long exposition scene where Dream kind of explains everything that happened in the previous 7 issues.
Right.
Where he just kind of goes over all of it and just kind of like, well, then this happened, and then this happened, and then that happened, and then this happened, and then all these other things happened. And now here we are at this point. And it's just like, okay, well, if this is your first issue that you're picking up, then, okay, I'm with you. I get why you're doing this, why you laid things out in this fashion, so, okay, I'm with you. I forgot about that. Then I remembered... So, obviously, Death is only here because she has a job to do. And, you know, she is the person who shows up when you are about to die. And she does this through a lot of different scenes. There's the old man playing the fiddle in his apartment alone. There's the woman who's the aspiring stand-up comedian. And so on and so forth. And, of course, as all this is going on, Dream is lamenting... Why does everyone react the way Togo... And what does he call it? He calls them... What lands? I forget. I just read it today.
The Sunless Lands?
Why does everyone react this way to going off to the Sunless Lands? Like it's something bad.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we know why, but obviously we as, you know, humans have a different perspective on death than one of the members of the Endless.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure the Sunless Lands are beautiful if you're a member of the Endless and once you're there, but obviously ordinary humans do not get to experience this.
Mm-hmm.
The one part that I forgot about, Todd. Oh, and I also forgot about the wraparound story of the dude who gets hit by the car. Spoilers.
Franklin. Well, I just want to say on Franklin, literally when he's macking on Death.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, I'm getting goosebumps right now, Joe, literally. When she's like, yeah, like this and that. And he's like, can we get a cup of coffee sometime or something like that? And she goes, oh, I'll see you again soon. And at that point, you know what I mean? You're like, that's so tragic. You know what I mean? Like, you know what's coming. And it goes around. The Franklin story is just great. And then, like you said, all the deaths, even the ones that we just get a taste of, like the bloody body at the bottom of the steps with the toy. You're like, these are all, I want to read all these stories. Like, it is brilliant. And it's like, here's the 3 deaths that we flesh out and you get to know the character. And then here's just a collage of deaths. And I'm like, I want to know all about these. Between Neil Gaiman, you know, probably describing the scene, and then Mike Drigenberg drawing it. I'm like, these are all things. And I'm reading stuff with Neil Gaiman. He does have a story for every one of those deaths. But the other thing you wanted to mention was?
The one that I forgot, as you mm-hmm. mentioned about all these different deaths. The one that I forgot was the baby.
Nope, I never forgot that one.
It's so jarring. Like, knowing, obviously, even if this is your first time reading the book,
mm-hmm.
they establish what she's doing, why she's doing it, what her purpose here is. And then you just get that page of the mother coming in. She's like, I'll be right back. I'm going to get your bottle. And you know what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you've read it a million times, or this is your first time, I don't think anything can prepare you.
Nope. And just the shot of, like, the overhead shot of her with the bottle that's on the floor and her, like, crying. It is gut-wrenching, the visual and, you know, the story. This is one of those, literally, when I talk about it and I start from the cover, the perfect blend of cover, art, and story. You can't beat it.
It's hard to disagree with this statement. It is an unbelievable single-issue comic book. This is... I could argue and say that this very well could have been the inspiration for this segment on the show.
It might have been.
Mm-hmm.
It might, like... And I want to do any hyperbole or anything. To me, like, there's a lot of, you know, like, I'm a Justice League International fan. I'm this fan. Sandman, to me... might be the greatest comic ever written. and it probably is to me. And of that run, there's a lot of stuff that I love, and there's a lot of quotes, and there's a lot of moments, and there's a lot of storylines. But this, to me, the greatest run of comics ever, this might be the greatest single issue of the greatest run of comics ever. And I'm not just saying that. I believe that. And this is the issue that made me literally in my heart of hearts fall, not joking around, and there's, you know, we do that a lot on the show, fall in love with the character Deck, the look, the attitude, the persona. Like, literally when it shows up again at the inns at the end of the world, and the guy who's stuck in the inn, he looks up at the funeral march, and he sees despair, and he sees delirium, and he sees them all. And Death is at the end, and he describes her, and he's like, when I saw her, I fell in love, and I will always love her. And in a weird way, I love this character in, like, indescribable ways. Not perverted, like, you know, Wizard World shows, but literally love the character with all my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's strange, Joe.
It is strange.
I've made Joe speechless. Can we cut this section out of the show?
No. I agree with what you said. Obviously, I got on board with Sandman a little bit later than you did.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't pick it up until, oh boy, the Ramadan issue 50. Was that before World's End or after? I think it was
before. That was before World's End, because Brief Lives was 41 to 49.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure World, was it Kindly Ones and then the World's End? End?
No,
World's,
Kindly
I always
Ones
get that.
Is the last story.
Right, and then there's the Wake is the last four issues.
Right, the last.
Right.
So I think it was that issue 50 that got me aware that Sandman was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And even just reading that made me like, oh my goodness, this book is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back and I gobbled up all the trades that existed that I could get, and obviously, getting involved with it a little bit late, this is one of the best books of all time. And I'm sure if I read issue 8 as it came out, I would probably have the same attachment to it that you do. But this was a really good book, and still remains to be a really good book.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, I could go on and on, like, even just weird things, like how they interconnect. Like, when Sandman puts a captured demon. I forget what issue it was. It was one in the first, like, dozen and a half issues. He captures a demon, and he puts him in a globe, and he puts it in this chest, and you open up the chest, and the first 12 issues of the book, the city from issue 50 is in that chest. Like, that's how ridiculously plotted out this ongoing story. So, yeah, it's great stuff.
It's a really good book.
Oh, I'm worn out again, Joe.
All right. Well, we're almost done here. The last bit of business, of course, is next week we're going to be talking about issue number 10 of Alias, the Brian Michael Bendis, Michael Gatos book.
Mm. Interesting, because I remember all of Alias, but I can't remember exactly what issue 10 is off the top of my head. So I look forward to reading this again.
Absolutely. I look forward to talking about it and reading it here again as well.
Yay.
And of course, the last bit of business, and we're going to get into spoiler heavy talk. So if you don't want the current number one movie in America and the highest grossing movie directed by a woman, and every other allocade that was foisted upon this film, Wonder Woman, if you don't want it spoiled for you, you haven't read it, whatever it is, we bid you adieu. We'll catch you all here next week. But we're going to get into some discussion here about the Wonder Woman feature film.
Mm-hmm. The first female superhero movie, apparently, even though there was one called Supergirl years and years ago.
That one doesn't count, you know it.
What? It's a female-led superhero movie. That's all I'm saying.
Todd, unless you forget, superhero movies didn't exist until Sam Raimi made them in 1999.
See, I thought they didn't even exist until you hit Iron Man, really, to tell you the truth.
Well, it really didn't exist until Blade, but that's neither here nor there.
Blade changed everything, all joking aside. People give Matrix the credit for all those effects, but they were done first in Blade, that bullet time stuff. But that's not the movie we're talking about this week.
No, we're talking about Wonder Woman, the next in the DC Cinematic Universe. More or less of a flashback tale of Wonder Woman's origin, both from Themyscira into her direct involvement to stopping World War I, or as it was called then, this big war.
The war to end all wars, so there was no more after that.
Correct. So, I did my best to avoid everything I could about this, of course. That's my way.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, I don't want to say upset, but I was saddened when we went to go see Pirates of the Caribbean 5 last week, and there was a new trailer for Wonder Woman in front of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it even just gave information about who the villain of the movie was supposed to be. That right. It was Dr. Poison.
Okay.
I didn't know that going into the movie. Not that it would change things, but I'm like, oh, it's too much information.
I know what you're saying. I didn't see that, so I was glad. And I didn't even really remember Dr. Poison as a character, to tell you the truth.
Right. Now, I did go with our friend DJ and his lovely wife, Michelle, and he was aware who Dr. Poison was.
Mm-hmm.
But I think sometimes when it comes to some of the weirder, more out there DC characters, he's gotten more of a grip on it than we do.
That is true. He's a fourth world guy.
That's right.
He loves that kind of stuff.
So I guess overall thoughts about the movie, any thoughts, concerns, overall opinions, whatever you'd like.
To start off, it's the best of the new DC cinematic movies. I really loved it. My only problem with it was probably the end of the third act. There was like some stuff that I didn't like about it with Ares and stuff like that. Like I did not know that Ares was going to be the English guy who sent them up. That was the swerve that I never saw coming. So I really liked that. I was like, oh my God, when he shows up at the end, you're like, he's not supposed to be there. He's Ares. You're like, oh my God. But after that, I didn't like him in the Ares armor that he makes from all the shrapnel, and seeing him like when he's struck down by Zeus. I don't picture a Greek god with a big bushy British mustache and a like his British accent that he was still using once he became Ares. I would have liked to have seen him become more of like more bigger than a British guy in armor that he makes from shrapnel. I would have liked, you know, fire for eyes and, you know, just something bigger and godlier. That was the only real problem I had with the end of the movie. But before that, I absolutely loved it. And I literally now have a new favorite scene in superhero comic book movies.
Okay.
Originally, it was Superman saving the plane in Superman Returns, which is not a great movie, but that was still my favorite scene in superhero comic book movies ever. And now it's Wonder Woman walking across no man's land.
Mm-hmm.
By far, one of the coolest things I've seen. And then as she goes into the town and she takes out the church sniper, that from no man's land to there, is I was blown away. I was like, this is one of the greatest scenes I've ever seen in a movie. So in the end, I really love this movie.
So, I like this movie a lot. Definitely, you know, we had said before that Suicide Squad by default was probably the best of the DC movies to this point.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it was a good movie by any stretch of the imagination. It was just the best of the worst. Whereas this is the best of the DC movies, but it's actually a good movie.
Right.
This is the closest to what Marvel is and has been doing with their movies that DC has gotten at all. like I said, overall, I like the movie because it feels very much like Captain America, the First Avenger, which I like, I think, a lot more than a lot of other people do.
Love that movie, but I know what you're saying. Go on.
It's not in a lot of people's... people probably put it in their bottom three of Marvel movies.
Mm-hmm.
I probably put it much, much higher.
I do too, because the whole Captain America trilogy so far has been some of my favorite stuff over at Marvel.
Right. So, because it's so closely aped that, I do have a lot of nitpicks about the movie. But okay. The nitpicks are so small that it does not deter from the goodness of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned almost every week on the show, and it's a similar analogy that Adam Carolla says that when you get an Oscar, that the Oscar should be made of chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And that every time you make a bad movie, you have to take a bite out of that Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
And once you've made enough bad movies that there is no more Oscar, you're no longer allowed to be called an Academy Award winning actor or actress or whatever, filmmaker.
Gotcha.
For me, the problems that I had with the movie are little nibbles, but it's not enough to deter me from liking the movie itself. Such as, I still don't like the muted color palette that's used in the DC films. Obviously, the colors popped a little bit more here, specifically Wonder Woman, of course, and especially in the scene that you mentioned where she walks across No Man's Land, of course. And obviously, I know there was the reason for it. Themyscira was supposed to be much more bright. England was supposed to be much more dark and drab and gray. And then, of course, once Ares is defeated, the film and the sun kind of shines through a little bit. And then that final scene where things are a little bit more brighter. But even the brighter scenes still had that DC Universe muted color palette.
Yeah, I didn't notice that as much because I liked it. I liked the whole thing that she shined in the world, like in a right. In a war weary world. So I have no problem with.
Right. Again, not a huge problem, but I just wish DC would get away from doing that muted color palette as a whole.
Okay.
And seeing the Justice League trailer beforehand didn't fill me with hope that they were actually going to do that.
Oh, they're not.
Okay.
Zack Snyder doesn't do colorful movies.
Okay. So another, again, nitpick. When they go into the town and she's going to save those people and she has the battle with the soldiers and she's using her lasso.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some dodgy special effects when she's whipping around that lasso.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, the special effects in the rest of the movie were fantastic. And again, not a problem with the movie itself. But more so with the DC movies themselves, they really need to get away from that weird slow-mo thing that they do for all of the action scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I get doing it for the trailer, but it feels like dated. It almost and feels repetitive. Like if I saw bullet time in a movie in 2017.
And it gets repetitive after four movies.
Right.
The effects were really good, but there are times, and I think the slow motion kind of ruined that, like where you'd see Diana like galloping over the hill on a horse,
mm-hmm.
and you'd see, you know, the close up on her in the slow mo,
yeah,
and the green screen in the background would be obvious. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Right.
And that kind of bothered me at times. I was like, that. And Themyscira, even though it's supposed to be a magical land with the waterfalls and everything, things didn't quite look right in the background at times. Like, there were times that I could say, this movie was shot on a green screen at times, and it didn't work for me. But other times, you know, the rest of the movie, look, that's a nitpick for me. And like I said, the Ares part at the end, and a little bit like you said, it reminds me of Captain America, the Steve, not Steve Rogers. What the heck is the Trevor sacrificing himself? It just felt like a Captain America story at the end, way too much for me.
And again, you know, I could forgive a little bit of dodginess with the special effects.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't those parts that you're talking about were a little bit more forgivable than that one scene with the lasso.
Mm-hmm.
Lastly, now, who is Chris Pine?
Yes.
Is the actor who played
Trevor.
Steve Trevor. And Gail Gadot?
Gal Gadot.
Gal Gadot. I was trying to be
not
funny.
Not Gal Gadot.
Right. So, Gal Gadot. And outside of that, I was unaware of any of the other actors in this film.
Did you ever see Trainspotting?
It's been a long time.
All right, the Scottish guy was from Trainspotting. I've never seen Trainspotting.
But, okay.
So, anyway, go ahead.
So then, when the British guy shows up, right?
Mm-hmm.
My wife nudges me and says, oh, he's a guy from the Harry Potter movies.
Oh, boy.
To which I say, oh, there's Ares.
Really?
Because if there's one other recognizable person in this film, he either has to be a good guy or a main good guy or a main bad guy.
I see what you're saying.
Right. So it's like the other quote unquote name actor, and I think he plays like sixth teacher down at Hogwarts or some nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as like my wife recognized who he was, and I'm like, okay, he's a legitimate actor, he's gonna be Ares. And it was still cool to reveal for him. And, you know, he's kind of telling Diana everything, and then he makes the armor, and then he puts the helmet on, and he puts his two fingers down, and I'm marking out. I'm like, oh, man, we're going to get red fire eyes Ares, and this is going to be, oh, no, it's just a guy with a bushy mustache with a helmet, and you could see his sad British eyes through the helmet. Oh.
You see, that's what I agree with, too, you know what I mean?
I got my hopes up. If I didn't get my hopes up that I was going to get flaming red eyes Ares, I don't think I would have been as upset.
And then, too, like I said, when he falls to Zeus and he's just shirtless in the rock, and I'm like, he looks like exactly like he does, like 1914 British guy. You know what I mean? Like, I've never seen in any portrayal of anything a Greek person. You know, I don't know. It just didn't look right to me. And the one thing I do have to say, as a man now, as a man,
right?
Like Gal Gadot is a gorgeous actress. Like throughout the movie, she's doing her thing, and I'm like, yes, Gal Gadot is very pretty, blah blah blah. But when she gets to the trench and she's like, that's it, it's on, and I just want to say, any other way them talking about no man's land and how no man could get across no man's land, it's literally no man's land. Is so, like, you know exactly what's going to happen, that a woman is going to do it. And it could have been the cheesiest cliched thing ever, and it wasn't, and it worked, which I loved. But when she lets her hair down and takes the coat off, and she climbs that ladder, and it's Wonder Woman. At that point, I'm like, we have attained full Wonder Woman. Boom.
I saw somebody took what parts of that scene that are in the trailer,
mm-hmm,
and cut it against the old 70s TV show theme song Wonder Woman, and it works.
Right, but perfect. She, and gorgeous. Like, amazing. I was like, I remember why I loved Wonder Woman. Here we go. Yay, Gal Gadot. Yay.
Yay.
So, overall, I love the movie. I only had a few nitpicks, but I hope it does well, and, you know, that it does better than people will think for, you know, not Batman movie. That's the way I look at it.
Right. And it already, you know, it did like over 200 million worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
Probably closing in on 3 as of this episode coming out. So, you know, I say that's an unequivocal hit for, you know, what very well could have been, you know, the first non-Batman, non-Superman DC movie.
Right, other than Suicide Squad.
Oh, well, Batman's in that.
That's true. That is true. Cameo.
He's in like 4 scenes.
Batman, Bruce Wayne's in it, not Batman.
Batman confronts Deadshot in the alley.
Right.
He has a prolonged chase sequence with the Joker on the streets, goes underwater and punches Harley Quinn in the face, and then has 2 Bruce Wayne scenes.
Right. But I would like to see screen time on that. It's probably a lot less than you think.
Hmm.
But what I mean is, I would like to see this movie do very well for a character that's not Batman. And I'm not knocking Wonder Woman as that, because Superman's the same way, just not the cachet. And go, this movie did very well and just see like the things that are different from the other movies and go, maybe we should, maybe this could turn the tide of the DC universe, if you know what I mean. I would hope for that, but I don't think the empty suits are that smart.
Who knows? They're still, as of this week, they're still doing reshoots on Justice League, but mm-hmm. their official statement is they're not doing reshoots on Justice League.
Well, you know what? And even that, I see people say that all movies get reshoots at times. So sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, but that has nothing to do with it. And then there's the whole thing with, you know, the tragedy in Zack Snyder's family. So there's stuff being done, you know, not by him. I'm like, there's a lot of rigmarole that has nothing to do with, you know, with good stuff over there. So I'll see when it comes out. You know what I mean? Like, right. I don't know.
All right, so is there anything else that we missed?
I can't think of anything.
All right, so I think this closes out this episode. So for Todd, this is Joe closing out episode 349 of Longbox Heroes, and we will catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boop!